Welcome to The Future is Female Powerlifting, a show where women of all strengths can explore the world of female powerlifting. I am your host, Heidi Donnell, a 60-kilo powerlifting gym owner, and each episode we bring you an inspiring interview or message to help you unlock your true inner strength potential. Thanks for tuning in. Aloha, my beautiful friends, and welcome back for episode 19. We are coming to you strong, rounding up 20 episodes, and I was so stoked to have this amazing podcast with my new homie, Miss Ana Perez, Miss Ana Smash on Instagram. And this was a really, really cool surprise for me, and I think you guys will all be taken everywhere in this story. Ana's story is amazingly powerful. It is tragic at times, and it is beyond inspiring towards the end. And it'll make more sense as we get into it and as you listen to the story. And please let me tell you that if you, you know, are like cutting in between and having to go to work, or if you're listening and you know you're like, okay, I gotta pause it, you have to listen to the end. And the end has a funny what the hell was I thinking. And if you guys haven't noticed, you know, I like to put the what the hell was I thinking, where we reflect back on shit that we've done that we're like, what the fuck was I thinking doing that? But oftentimes I forget. And it's because sometimes I get really wrapped up in these conversations that adding these things, you know, if I had a producer, he'd probably be on it. But since I don't, it's in my own memory that I have to rely on. So anyway, she was like, oh, hey, you didn't ask me this, and gave hilarious, what the hell was I thinking? So please tune in to the very end. And with this episode with Ana Smash, we go over all types of things, and it starts off with Ana really talking about her story, and I won't even talk about or intro that, because her story is very powerful, and it starts very tragically and ends beautifully, like I said. And to me, her story is inspiring because right now her life is at a place where I don't think she could have ever imagined it would be, you know, 10 years ago. And I think that that is something that puts in perspective for me where your life can go, even at the hardest times. Ana is a web designer. She's a web designer. She's a graphic designer. I mean, she does a whole bunch of shit, guys. She did Stacey Burr's shirts. Almost all of Stacey's designs are her designs. She also did Cece's website, and that's Cece Ingram. Her new website and new logo. She also did Hopperican, our previous episode, Miss Amanda Kohatsu. She did her website. Man, this girl is all over the place. And so if you guys are interested in somebody who is in the fitness industry, who understands what you need to kind of take your training to the next level as a fitness professional, I highly recommend Ana. And one thing I'll leave you with her episode, it is a quote that I wrote down now, is you don't have to settle with the cards you were dealt. And I'll leave you with that. And I did want to say what's up to everybody that leaves reviews and, you know, takes screenshots. Dude, I love it. I love it. Every single one of you that send me a response, you know, I'm writing back to you, because it just warms my heart that you guys are feeling these episodes. You like what's coming out, and you're sticking with it, because that episode, this last one with Amanda, was very long. So I understand if it was like, you know, it was a lengthy one, and we're a long form podcast. You know, I don't like to cut the stories. It's not a 30-minute thing. That's just not how the format of my podcast is. And I like that way. You know what I'm saying? And I would like to read a review from iTunes. And if you guys leave reviews on iTunes or Facebook, I know you can't do it on Spotify, I totally, totally dig it. And I will read it, because, you know, when you leave those reviews, it actually helps Google rank us better. And that way I can get out more, and you know, it sort of just helps me spread the word out. And so every time you guys are sharing this online and everything, it just further helps me help our community of powerlifting women. And with that, I did want to read our latest review. And this one's from CD292913. And she said, I can't even put into words how amazing this podcast is. I found so much motivation, inspiration, and joy listening to Heidi and all of her guests. I found myself binging on every episode and even listening to some twice because of how much I enjoyed them. Keep them up. The world is needing this podcast. That is just so awesome. Thank you so much, CD. I like that. CD 2913, you humble me with your words and I appreciate everything. And this episode is brought to you by my gym, Core Strength and Performance, out in Huntsville, Alabama, where we help people live a little stronger every day. And so if you're interested in strength training, you don't know where to start, most of our clientele is women. We have open gym as well as small group classes, but we specialize in a small class base. So it's 8 people or less in each of our classes. And we will, going forward, have powerlifting. So in-person powerlifting and online, but our online will be very selective because my husband and I are very adamant about giving the best that we possibly can. And so we won't be just, you know, doing programs and giving them out. We just really want to coach people and help people get stronger in their lifts, and stronger in all together. So if you are interested, you hit us up on Instagram or on Facebook or at coach@core256. Why is it so hard for me right now? I think I had too much coffee. coach@core256.com, or you can visit our website, core256.com, and let's get in it with Anna.
I'm only doing little bits of creamer, and it's actually almond milk creamer that I do because, like, I'm very basic with my coffee drinking. I've only been doing it for 2 weeks, but I'm a pro.
Is that how long it's been drinking coffee?
Yeah, I've been doing it for 2 weeks now.
I thought it was like a couple months, not even 2 weeks.
No, literally when I told you about it, was that's when I started drinking. It was like 2 days later. I told you I started drinking coffee. That's literally how long I've been drinking coffee, and I'm almost 36. So
that is so crazy.
This whole fucking time.
Well, I think my husband had coffee for the first time last year and he was 34. And I think he might have had it before because he just didn't like it. He was like, I fucking hate coffee. So gross, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, how could you say that? Like, my parents own a coffee farm. So it's like blasphemy, you know?
Oh, yeah. That, no, I get that 100%.
It's like that. Yep. And he, you know, but the one thing he does like is tostones. Actually, I was going to show you. So we have Publix out here. Do you guys have Publix where you're at?
We don't, but I'm familiar with Publix.
Okay. Yeah. So, right. Like, for those of people who are listening, we're on, by the way. This is like, we've already started. Okay. We're doing this. We've already started.
I like that. Yeah. Very casual.
Yes. I don't, you know, I before I get into my tostones story. Yeah. I mean, I think that's, you know, I don't want it to be so structured. You know, like, the questions naturally come with the conversation, and that's, I think that we have good conversations already, so I can only imagine when it's something like this. But yeah, I like it to be very casual and us just talking and stuff. But so my husband found these bags of tostones, and we've eaten like bagged tostones before, and I was like, yeah, you know, they're like not like the real thing. These are delicious. They're little bags, and they are smaller, and they're super crunchy. So it's not like the real ones that'll have that kind of softness in the middle, and, you know, it's not like that. It's definitely like more of a chip, but it is like, he ate so many one time because he was doing the paleo AIP thing, and his stomach was jacked for like a couple days because it's, you know, it's like bananas, and that thing will stuff you up like a hot dog if you don't freaking, you know, moderate how you eat it. So I recommend, for if you ever go out to Publix.
You know, when I went to school in Puerto Rico, I remember, because this was like kindergarten, first grade time frame, and my parents actually owned a restaurant in Puerto Rico.
No way.
And yeah. So I remember, it sounds a lot like what you're talking about. They were in these little bags, and they were plantain chips, and they were like salty, but they were like a garlic salt, and they were really crispy, and they were bomb. They were so good. And I haven't been able to find them anywhere else, but I'm pretty sure, I don't know if it's the same thing, but I definitely grew up with like some sort of plantain in a bag thing. And
I like that. This one doesn't have garlic. Yeah. This is just salt.
Oh yeah. They do garlic. I think I've been to Puerto Rico since, and I've seen other seasonings that they put in, you know, like spicy ones, just plain salt. Yeah. But the garlic ones, those are the OG plantain chips, and I highly recommend. Yes.
So where did your parents have a restaurant?
Where?
Yeah.
It was in Manatí, Puerto Rico. Manatí. I don't know if you are familiar with kind of the different cities. Manatee is like a small town. Okay. It is west of San Juan. So if you fly into the San Juan airport, it's west. So it's kind of smack dab in the middle on the north coast.
Okay.
And so it's next to Vega Baja, which is where my family's from, my mom's side of the family, in which I went to school there. And the town adjacent to it is Manatee. And so that's where my parents had a restaurant. But since then, there have been a lot of not really like tsunamis. I wouldn't say tsunamis, but like it's since it's right there on the coast, like the ocean from the hurricanes and all that has literally wiped out so much. It's like borderline tsunami. Like it's wiped out most of the town. Oh, so the area where my parents had a restaurant, I remember trying to go visit. It's not even there anymore. It's just like a ghost town. It's kind of sad.
How sad. Is that from everything that happened recently or is it like just
over the years?
Over the years.
Yeah. Yeah, over the years of just wear and tear, just because the ocean is pretty rough over there. And just the salt, I think, just kind of corrodes everything. And everything's made out of cement over there. So the buildings just literally crumble.
Yeah.
So a lot of streets are just shut down. And just looks kind of eerie because it's like a ghost town, you know?
Oh, that's weird. Yeah, now that you say that, even when I was in Old San Juan, there's always like broken roads. There's concrete that's kind of jacked. And I never thought about that, the ocean probably plays a part in that. Because my grandpa's from Juanadias and my grandmother used to live in Caguas, but she lives in Florida now because after the hurricane, it was just too much. And so my mom actually flew down, got her, and then, uprooted her to Florida where she's not very happy about it. If it was up to her, she'd be still living there in her house all jacked, but she misses her family and her friends, everybody that's out there. So it's kind of interesting to be in the mix of things and then having to leave like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember I grew up there. Well, I wouldn't say grew up, but I spent kindergarten, first grade, second grade.
Wow.
So I moved around back and forth and I returned when I was around 10 or 11 and I stayed there for another couple of years. So I kind of was bouncing around between the States and Puerto Rico. So it was interesting childhood. Yeah, it was cool. I mean, I really, when I think back to my childhood, I'm like, man, Puerto Rico was so bomb. Like, I'm so grateful that I have been able to experience growing up in such a beautiful place because it's really awesome.
Yeah, my brother was there for 1 year in his youth and he didn't speak any Spanish. So he had to, he ended up learning a little bit, but he doesn't speak nothing now. But he had a great time being with my grandparents out there and it is a different experience. And now you can't, it's not the same, everybody talks about how hard it is now after the hurricane and how it just doesn't. My grandma always says that she's like, Puerto Rico will never be the same like how it was. It's so sad,
It is sad.
So when we started talking online, I think, I don't even know, how did you hear about the podcast? Did you just start listening? Is that how this happened?
I mean, you've literally interviewed so many of my friends.
Oh, is that how it happened?
So I've been just kind of listening as I see all your episodes coming around. But I'm a big fan of your podcast.
Oh, so that's so awesome.
I've been listening to it for quite a while now and following your page. So yeah, I think we just started talking because I think the first time we talked was I posted about some books that I had in my collection. We were talking about the Four Agreements, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that's kind of, I think, what initiated our convos. And since then, we've just kind of been chatting here and there and then just kind of led us to having some deep discussions lately.
I know. And, I just started reading that book because I promised myself I wouldn't start, because this is what I always do. I start a book and then I'm like, ooh, let me get this one. And I start that book. And then I kind of forget where I'm at. I don't know if anybody else has this problem, but I come back to it and I'm like, gosh, what was the point they were trying to make? It's almost like following a movie halfway. And so I'm like, and then I have to read back a little bit. I'm like, oh, so I said, okay, I'm not going to start this book until I started, finish one, but I didn't finish the other one. And I started the book anyway, but I only got through the first couple pages and it really kind of, the book talks about Toltec, and really his sort of how this person, the author is giving his story. Why do you like that book so much?
I think why I like the book is because it's so simple, it just kind of gives you some principles about living everyday life that just aren't really that hard, but they are hard, one of the things I really like about that book is one of the four agreements is to not play the victim.
Yeah.
And that sounds very simple, like, okay, don't play the victim. But, you know, even I catch myself doing that sometimes. It's easy to get wrapped up in that.
Yeah.
And, but at the same time, if you can really apply principles like that to your life, you'd find that some situations become a little easier to deal with.
Yeah.
So I do like that book because I think it gives you some really solid advice to just dealing with, you know, circumstances in your life that might be, you know, you could take personally or, you know, kind of spin it around in your head. So it's important to just kind of take that step back and kind of analyze the situation. And I think when you don't play the victim and when you don't take, you know, your words, things that you say so personally or things that others say to you so personally, it does make a difference.
Yeah. You know, and it's always about how you handle the situation, right? It's not necessarily the situation that was given to you. And I think, I think that's very important, important note for somebody like you. And I think, you know, for our listeners, that that was one of the most compelling things that, you know, that that surprised me about you, because I had seen the article, and I didn't read the article. I just noted that, you know, you had been in the paper, and I actually read it, you know, when, you know, later on, and I was so taken back by your story and how you grew up and sort of your life and to lead you where you're at now. And I think that that was the most surprising, because I was expecting a story about like, yeah, you know, I started web design and I was really into this, you know, I was expecting something like that. And instead, I mean, I was so blown away by your story. And maybe you can share with everybody a little bit about you, who you are and where this all started.
Okay. My story is pretty much about adversity and overcoming it. I would say that that's kind of, you know, if I had to summarize it in one sentence, it would be that. But really it started from the day I was born, like straight out the womb, I was faced with adversity. My biological mom, she was addicted to heroin and cocaine, and she used during her pregnancy with me. So with that, I was born actually addicted to drugs, and I was having withdrawals when I was born. it's a really hard story. So my mom actually abandoned me, and she sold me to her neighbors that lived in the projects, and she sold me for drug money, and then she fled the state. So those neighbors, they called the police, and my mom, she was never found. I don't know where she is. I've never met her. I don't know anything about her other than a little bit of information that I've learned over the years. So I was placed in a foster home with a Puerto Rican family. And, you know, I'm really grateful that they adopted me, and they're the only family that I've ever known. And I know a lot of kids that get put into the foster care system. I have two brothers and sisters, and they were in the foster care system, and they bounced around from home to home, and they didn't have very pleasant childhood. So I am very grateful that the family that adopted me when I was 2 months old is still the family that I have today.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just wish that I could say that it ended there in terms of adversity. But it doesn't. I come from a broken home. My parents actually divorced when I was five. So, those were, you know, my formative years, you know, and after my parents got divorced, my mom, she started dating this guy, and he started to, he sexually abused me, from the ages of, I want to say like 7 or 8, all the way till I was like probably 11 or 12. And I could never talk about it because I was so young. I didn't really even understand what was happening at that time. So I just continued to build this invisible wall. And I isolated myself and I ignored my feelings. And we moved around a lot after the divorce. we were on welfare and we lived in some bad neighborhoods. So I never really had a chance to really call a place home and make friends or anything. So instead, I always got picked on. And, you know, it got so bad to the point where I would lock myself in my room because I just didn't want to go to school. And I remember probably being around like 10 years old, I started cutting myself all the time. And I didn't even know what cutting was. Like, I didn't even know that it was a thing, but I knew that I liked the escape, you know, from the pain that I got from it. And I did that for years, and I still have scars from that.
Wow.
And so eventually when I was about 12, I started smoking marijuana, and then my dad found out about it. So he was really concerned and worried for me. And that's when he sat me down and he told me the truth about who I was. And he said, your name is Joanna Berrios, and we adopted you because your mom was a drug addict and she sold you for drugs. So just imagine being 12 years old and somebody telling you this.
Yeah.
So it's like everything that you thought and knew is just like, I mean, literally my whole world was turned upside down. You know, that's how it felt. And I think, I mean, it literally was turned upside down. So with that, things just spiraled out of control from that point on. During all that, I was actually a straight A student. So my grades started to suffer. I started to isolate myself even further. And eventually I just filled the void using more drugs. I dropped out of high school when I was 16. So by the time I was in my 20s, I was pretty much addicted to everything and anything. And then, you know, tried to get some help in between all that. And during that time, I was actually diagnosed with PTSD. And I didn't really understand what all that meant at the time. And in the last couple of years, I've really been working on trying to understand it better and to overcome, you know, the symptoms that I've had from PTSD. And I know now that, you know, some of those things that caused that was, you know, being abandoned at birth, you know, struggling with my identity as a result of that, being addicted to drugs, you know, the sexual abuse, and pretty much all the trauma that I've endured moving forward. So, you know, it's been a difficult journey. And, you know, I'm not like, you know, sharing all this and talking about it to like glamorize or romanticize addiction. But I just, you know, I want people to know that, you know, even though I was born into adversity and, you know, all the odds were against me, that, you know, I was able to turn it around. And I think that other people can too. And so I know that it's, you know, it's a difficult subject, but I know that there's people out there that can't speak for themselves because they're still suffering. So I hope, you know, by sharing my story that I can be a voice for those people.
Yeah. It's so crazy because I didn't really know about everything else in your youth. I knew that, you know, you had a big past with, you know, with your mother and your mom had even said that you cried a lot as a child. And that's how you guys found out technically that, you know, you were as a baby, as an infant, you were addicted and that you would have to work through that as an adult, which is so crazy to think of as far as adversity and things that you're just going to have an uphill battle. And that your brother, so you had a turning point at one point, right, with your brother, and you're at your lowest time in your 20s, and your brother pretty much saved you out of a very bad situation, right? And what made you turn from that point? Like, this is the lowest part of your life. What made you sort of, what was that point for you? Why did you choose that moment? Why was that moment powerful for you?
I think I just really had enough, you know, and that's just really what it is, that rock bottom where you just feel like I'm going to die. Like, this is the only, like, I'm just standing here at, you know, in a crossroads, and I can either go this way and just really try and get myself out of this, or if I continue where I'm at, I'm going to die. And when my brother found me, he found me in the projects in Southeast DC, and I was wearing a drug dealer's clothes. I had his jeans on and I had his hoodie on, and I weighed maybe 120 pounds soaking wet. Jeez. And the reason why I didn't have my clothes is because during that whole time that I was there, I had gotten so strung out on drugs and ran out of, you know, money and anything to pawn off. And so the drug dealers that I was around, they took advantage of me just so that I could get my next fix. And I was in such a bad place mentally and emotionally that I really just wanted to die. And I think that, you know, you just lose all of your dignity and your self-respect and just your whole being, like who you are. Like, I just didn't feel like a person anymore.
Yeah.
And so I was like a shell, you know, and I just kept using and using and using to just further, just pack those feelings down and just create that wall around me. And it's like, I wasn't even there. So to be honest, I have no memories of when all those instances occurred, but I just know that I ended up not having my own clothes and not having jewelry that I once had, that were gifts from, you know, loved ones, like all the things that mattered to me at one point were no longer there.
Yeah.
And so when I had that turning point, that was pretty much coming to the realization of all those things that I had to do something different.
Yeah.
And it had to take everything that I had to do that complete 180.
And I found it interesting that you didn't go to like actual rehab, right?
No, I did not at that point, but later on in my life, I did go to some NA meetings, and I went for probably, I want to say less than a year, like maybe 6 to 7 months. And I worked with a sponsor and everything, and that's really just because I wanted a deeper understanding of addiction and just trying to do things that I hadn't tried before, just to kind of really reinforce my decisions to keep moving forward and stick with never going back to the streets. And so sometimes it's important to go back and hear other people's stories and sit in those meetings, because addiction is really funny like that. It can do things to you where, you begin to romanticize things. You remember those, fun times and what it was like, and you forget that you were in a crack house in DC and somebody was raping you for drugs, and you don't have anything that belongs to you, including your self-respect or dignity, like that type of stuff. So you forget.
It's like a bad relationship. You start romanticizing all the good things, and then you kind of interesting. So what, how was that first couple steps for you after that point? What sort of things did you do in order to kind of take that next step?
Really, it was that whole saying about one day at a time. That's honestly the first step, was I just had to make it through one day of not going out there on the streets. It really started at that level. And it was the next day I didn't use again. And then the next day, I decided that, I should, take a shower and I should start eating again. And it was like literally I had to rebuild myself from like the most minuscule level all the way up. Like I had to take those steps. So it wasn't a thing of like, oh, well, I got clean. So the next day I just, wrote a resume and got my shit together and got a job, and my life was, what, it was so much work. And the hardest part, I think, was really the mental part of it. I
What's
think
going on in
putting,
your head that during that time? Like you're trying to take a step forward. What is pulling you back?
fear, definitely afraid, because I spent so much of my life running and just trying to escape reality. So I think the biggest, setback was like, well, I actually have to face reality. Like what's going through my mind right now is that fear of I have to try to be a person. Like I can't just keep hiding and running away. And that's really scary to take that first step.
That's so crazy. So you're taking this first step, you're doing all of this. Are you living with your brother? Are you living on your own? Are you working? Are you doing anything like that at that time?
Yeah, so I had roommates that I was living with at the time. And so that whole situation got crazy because of, my behavior at the time. They told me that I had 30 days to move. And my brother, he was here, but I wasn't able to live with him because, he was in his own situation and working, and just it was like, couldn't accommodate me. And I wouldn't want to put that on him anyway. So I just, that was kind of really it, was like, okay, well, I'm getting kicked out. I didn't have a job. So it was just kind of like my only skill at the time was bartending and knowing how to sell drugs. Like those are the only things that I knew how to do that whole time. So I had to get it together. And when that happened, I did. I reached out to a temp agency, and that's kind of how I got started, was like I put in a resume, and of course I BS'd my way through that entire resume,
I like
but it
that you
was
told me
enough.
that. You're like, I can sweet talk my way into certain things, but you know what? I think a lot of us do a lot of that in some way.
But at that was kind of like a fight or flight moment. It was survival mode. Like, what am I gonna do? Like, I have to. I just figured that if I was so willing to do whatever it took to get my fix, that I can switch that mentality and do whatever it takes to make myself better. I know that I'm capable of doing the most unimaginable shit just to do something to hurt myself. So I can do the most unimaginable shit to turn my life around. So I'm gonna BS my way through a resume just to get an office job, and I'll build my experience starting from there. And that's really how it began, was I just took that step forward and I started going to work every day. And then next thing I had a paycheck. And then next thing I made better friends that, were professionals and like-minded, and I was able to get a different place to live. And, it just kind of, I feel like once you make that effort to start doing the right thing and taking steps in that direction, that things start to fall into place.
Right.
You know, I think if your intentions are good, you're going to surround yourself with people that are, you know, in the same mindset and that want the same things. So you end up kind of falling into that path.
Yeah, I agree. It's like where you put your energy, those things will start to come. I feel like, you know, you're starting to line your dominoes in line. And it's sort of one, when one good, I always think this, like with us, like just opening a business, we had one good thing happen, then another small thing. And, it, you know, and those things sort of cascade, but it does take time for it to kind of get to that point. So you started off, what kind of job did you have? What was the first desk job?
The first job I had was actually working, because I live out here in the Virginia area, right outside of DC. So yeah. I actually got a job working for the Smithsonian Institution, and they have a corporate office here in Virginia. And so the temp agency actually placed me to work at the front desk. And so my job was answering phones and opening mail. And that's how it started. And then eventually, while I was working there, I started, you know, like I said, I was getting paid regularly. So I decided that I wanted to go to school because, like I mentioned earlier, I had dropped out of high school.
Right.
And during that time, I got my GED like when I was 20, but I never did anything after that. Like, I think I tried going to community college, but I was still so screwed up on drugs that I just never went to class.
Right.
So it was just a waste. But this time I was ready. So I started taking some classes at the local community college here for information technology. And it's just funny how things work because, again, like I said, you know, when your intentions are good and you're really trying to do the right thing, other people take notice of that.
Yeah.
So a manager that was in the IT department, this was about a year later when I had the job, she came up to me and she was like, mind you, we never really talked before. I don't know how she knew this, but she found out through somebody that I was taking classes for IT. And so she came up to me and she was like, I heard you're taking classes for some IT stuff. And I was like, yeah, I am. And she was like, well, I actually have one of my guys, he's leaving military. He's going to be gone for like 2 years. And I really need someone to fill his spot. And I was thinking of hiring someone from the outside, but I'd much rather give the position to you. And I'm like, well, I don't have any experience doing IT work. She was like, that's okay, I'll train you.
No freaking way.
And that's how it started. And so from there, I had, you know, I made my first like decent paying job, and the rest of my life really started to kind of, you know,
unfold.
Yeah. In a positive way. But the thing about it is that during that time, I was still kind of in this spot because I'm still struggling being an addict.
Yeah.
You know, so I now am put in this position that I feel like I'm living a double life. You know, and that is like really, really, that can be really hard for an addict, because the thing about addiction is that, well, it's a symptom, you know, like a lot of people are really misunderstood on what addiction is, but it's a symptom to an underlying cause. Like, we all have some reason why addiction, you know, takes a hold of us. It's because we're running from something else. We have some void that we're trying to fill.
Right.
And drugs, or I mean, addiction can be anything though, right? It's not just substance abuse, alcohol. It's, you can become addicted to, you know, food, sex, gambling. I mean, whatever your vice is, it's whatever that is to fill that void.
Yeah.
But I'm still struggling because I stopped doing drugs, like that wasn't it, right? Because that wasn't the cure to my addiction. The cure to my addiction was finding out, addressing the issues that I had.
Right.
So now I'm kind of put in this position working these professional jobs where I can't really be open with people. I didn't feel like I could be open with people about, there was this whole part of my life that they asked me, oh, like, so, you know, what's your deal? Like, where were you before you came to Virginia?
Right.
And I feel like I have to kind of really like gloss over that entire part of my life. And that's a really dangerous place to be. And I found myself doing more harm than good because I put my own feelings and processing everything that had happened to me on the back burner because I was trying to be this other person. So it's like, again, that struggle with your identity, you know, and just kind of pushing everything about who I really am behind me and not ever addressing it or trying to work through it. So that was definitely a struggle.
Yeah, I could see, because that's not, for one, an easy conversation. How does somebody kind of gently tell a past that is hard to hear sometimes, you know? But that, so now, do you find yourself being more open with that?
Yeah. And honestly, it's been so healing for me to do it. And I really have to say that I think if it wasn't for powerlifting, you know, I really have to give that credit, because that's what I really needed to find that strength, you know?
Yeah.
It's given me so much confidence, and it's given me a network of people that's my tribe, that's my people, you know, and I feel like I've connected more, because I feel like we all have a common denominator as powerlifters, like, you know, reasons why we're drawn to a sport like this, you know, and for me, I felt like it was there were a lot of parallels with powerlifting, like the idea that you could get under some, you know, big ass weight and that it can crush you and kill you, but yet you still stand up with it. Yeah. And then you do another rep, and then you do another rep. And I feel like that really is just like a visual representation of my life. That's what I go through every day. You know, I have these weights that are on top of me that I still stand up with them. Yeah. And that's been me overcoming all the adversities and struggles I've faced in my life. And I can translate that into powerlifting. Yeah. And I think that it served as a vehicle for me to give me that strength to be able to finally face the demons that I've had. And I can just face them and address them, and to be able to openly talk about it and to be vulnerable and transparent with people.
Yeah.
It's priceless. There's so much therapy that comes with that and healing that, I mean, I just don't even have the words to describe, but
That is so powerful. And I feel like exactly what you're saying, I've heard from so many people in different ways, you know, that powerlifting, especially for women, I find maybe it's because we're not classically strong, quote unquote, strong people, physically strong, right? But for whatever reason, powerlifting has sort of transcended that for us, you know? So it's like you feel strong and you feel this sense of community within all these people as well. So how did that even start for you? Where did powerlifting come into play? Because right now you sound like very like, what's up? I'm corporate. I'm up in IT jobs. And not like, how does powerlifting come into play?
Yeah, like what happened here? There's this huge gap.
Yes, so there's this huge gap. Explain it.
when I had that job working for Smithsonian, and, you know, I'm making money and getting my life back together, I always, since I was young, have always been about weights. Like, I have pictures of myself, like, 3-4 years old, flexing my muscles and stuff. And like, I've always been attracted to strength and just especially weightlifting. Yeah. So for a while, I initially got into Bikram yoga. So I was doing hot yoga. That helped me so much with my recovery. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever practiced it before or know anyone that has.
Yep.
But, you know, it's hot. It's complete torture. There's something about it. There's something about it that you fucking die.
Yes.
And you're like, I want to go back. I don't know why, what it is, but I want to go back. And I swear it did so much for my mindset. Like, the idea of being in a situation that was extremely uncomfortable, and having to, you know, just ride it out for 90 minutes inside that hot ass room.
Yep.
And then I made it. And there was something about it that just really did something for me. So I practiced Bikram yoga for a good 6 years. And then what started happening was I got really into the more advanced postures. And I don't know if you know this about Bikram yoga, but they actually have a competitive side. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're called the Asana Championship. So Asana is the posture.
Yeah.
And so they do competitions on the posture. And so you see these people that, and they have a whole routine, and they get on the stage and they compete. I've never in my life, you know, I struggle with social anxiety so fucking bad. So there was no way in hell that I could ever imagine myself competing or doing anything of the sort. But what started the competitive, you know, it planted the competitive seed for me was Bikram yoga. And I got really good at practicing. Like, I was really bendy and like strong and doing all these freaking advanced postures.
Oh my God. So, I need to see pictures of this. This would be pretty awesome.
So I'll go ahead and forward them to you. Leave. Like, I mean, I was rocking my fucking yoga. And so I wanted to become competitive. And so I started taking the advanced classes. And some of those postures needed a lot of hand, like arm balancing. Mm-hmm. And I had like no upper body strength. And, you know, I always wanted to find that balance where I could be kind of like jacked, but do yoga at the same time. And it's so hard to be jacked and flexible because now I have zero flexibility. So I try to go to yoga and I'm like a fucking robot. It's an embarrassment to my practice, what it used to be.
But I'm going to put in there, once you become a powerlifter, you need some of that. So I always tell people that it's like, you know, the flexibility is not all it's cut up to be when you are trying to compete in something like powerlifting, where you need a lot of rigidity in your joints and things like that. So, you know, it would do you no good. But on the same note, we probably need somewhere in the middle, you know, where it's like not extreme there and not extreme there. Let's have something in the middle where you're healthy, you know, healthy joints.
Exactly. And I feel like the Bikram yoga awakened this extremist in me. Like I knew, obviously, with my history, the things from my past were kind of like, whoa, red flags, extremist. But I became aware of that when I started practicing. Like, this is a really extreme yoga. And then the competition side of it, I don't know, it fueled me, right?
So exciting. I wanted
to do whatever I could to get stronger so that I could be competitive at yoga. And so I thought about, what if I go to the gym and like, what if I talk to like a personal trainer and like, see what I can do, you know, maybe I can get like jacked in my upper body so I can do those, you know, arm balancing.
I would have loved to have you as a client because every, you know, usually what do you get is like, I need to lose 50 pounds in 3 months. That's a personal trainer, not in powerlifting world, but as a personal trainer, that's what you usually get. Like, it's those ones, not like, I want to be jacked in my upper body so I can be competitive in Bikram yoga. Like, that's
exactly what I said.
That's pretty awesome. I'll be like, we're going to fucking get you jacked. That's what's going to happen.
I'm like, listen, I really need you to get me jacked, like particularly like the chest and like shoulders, because I really need that stability. I'm working in crow and it's like just such a pain in the ass. So if you could just get this part of my body jacked. And so the personal trainer chick, she was just like this like bikini competitor, you know, and she's like, yeah, okay. And
so, are you sure you don't want to lose 50 pounds?
Let's start 3 days a week, you know, and then come in and train. And so, you know, we start training, and she actually incorporated a lot of the powerlifting movements in our training. So we started, you know, deadlifting and doing stuff like that. And I remember benching and 45-pound bar, like, nearly buried me.
Oh, my gosh, that's so crazy.
Yeah. No, I was, like, hella weak, right?
Right.
And she, over time, she kept saying, like, maybe, like, 2 or 3 months in, she kept saying that my numbers were just, like, really surpassing like all of her clients. She was like, you're getting like really strong. And I don't know what it was about that, but when she said that to me, I was like,
fuck
strong?
Yeah.
Like, strong. Fuck yeah. I'm like, okay, what do I need to do to get strong? So I went from wanting to compete Bikram yoga to, okay, I'm fuck yoga. I just want to get strong.
Yeah.
And you should really think about powerlifting. And so that's kind of, she planted the seed.
Wow.
And then I had a friend that a friend of mine had a garage gym, and she was a CrossFit instructor.
Okay.
And so she's like, look, you can come to my house. And actually, I made a website for her. So she was like, we can barter. If you make me a website, I'll teach you how to powerlift.
Yes.
I'm like, done, bring it.
Yes.
So I started showing up at her house religiously twice a week. And she started showing me all, you know, squat, bench, deadlift. You know, I was even overhead pressing and doing a couple other movements as well. But we did all barbell workouts. And I started.
I'm surprised you learned bench, because CrossFitters do not bench.
Yeah, she actually was pretty good at benching. So
awesome.
She had a background in like MMA and stuff too.
Oh, cool.
So she was actually one of the first female fighters in out of Virginia that fought professionally. So,
wow. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a pretty badass person. So, you know, she really pushed me hard, and it got to the point where I was making so much progress that I had a real sit-down conversation with her, and I was like, you know, I really want to pursue this further. Where else do we go from here? Like, I see stuff on the internet about people competing, and like, what do I do? And she was very honest with me. She was like, look, I know how to do all this stuff, but as far as coaching you into wanting to do something more, I don't really know where to begin. Mm-hmm. And so I Googled on, you know, locally where I could find something, powerlifting, a gym or anything. And in this area at the time, this was 2015, there was nobody here. I mean, powerlifting just wasn't a thing. And there was one gym that's an hour away from my house. And the coach from that gym, who ended up becoming my first powerlifting coach, he replied to my email, and then I went and I trained with him. And then
an hour away.
I drove an hour four times a week. And wow. I would train 2-3 hour sessions, and I would drive an hour back home. And that was what started that dedication that I had to the sport that I still have today. I actually still drive an hour because the gym that I go to now, the shop gym, yeah, that's out in Manassas, Virginia as well. It's an hour. So
I love that. I mean, yeah. It's one of those things where I would go really far for that, you know, and I always laugh when people, like in my city, I live in Huntsville, and I live in South Huntsville, and Madison is like northeast of Huntsville. And technically it's outside of Huntsville. I don't even know if it's considered, it's literally 30 minutes, and people are like, oh no, I can't, like, that's just too far. And it just makes me laugh because I would drive far if I could go to a powerlifting gym. You know, if you wanted that much, you'll drive anywhere from an hour to a couple hours, you know?
Yeah. That's exactly what I did and what I still do today.
That is so crazy. My kid's jiu-jitsu instructor, she would drive, it was something crazy, like 4 or 5 hours a couple times a week for years. And she became the first black belt BJJ instructor in Alabama. She was like well-known and anyways, but it just shows dedication and how it takes it to that level. And so when did you compete after that? So you started training with him. And what was the goal after that? You're like, okay, there's a competition coming up. I want to start doing that one.
Well, he told me that if I didn't compete, then I wasn't a real power lifter. So he was like, you can come here and train. He's like, but if you don't do a meet, then you're not a power lifter and you can't be on my team. And I was like, okay. Well, and so this is coming from a person who, like I said, massive social anxiety, the whole competing for yoga thing. Like I wanted to do it, but I feel like deep down, like, I don't think I ever would have gone through with it. You know, I just had way too much anxiety doing that kind of stuff. So when he told me that I had to compete, I really, really struggled with that because it was almost like that was like 6 months away from when I had started training there. I competed 6 months later in a USAPL meet. And I was like losing my shit mentally leading up to that day, because it was like I was playing all these scenarios in my head of how crazy and terrible it was going to be. And, you know, I didn't know what to expect. Right. And like I said, powerlifting wasn't a thing here. So I didn't have all the resources that I have right now that I could just easily get on Instagram or talk to somebody over here at the gym and get all these pointers and stuff. I didn't have all that back then. So I really just kind of went into it.
It's awesome.
Let's do it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So your nerves must have been like crazy. What about after you started squatting? Were you feeling better about it? I feel like people start feeling better after the first lift.
Yeah, I was still pretty nervous just because I, you know, like I said, I was only 6 months into competitive powerlifting. So my form, technique, I didn't know shit about shit when I got on that platform. Yeah. I watch my videos and I'm like, oh my God. But somehow, I remember my first total too. I totaled 705 in the 185 weight class for USAPL. Yeah. And at the time you only needed, I think 585 pounds or something for a total to qualify for Raw Nationals.
Oh, really?
So I qualified for Raw Nationals. So then my second competition ever was at USAPL Raw Nationals.
And that is so crazy.
Let's get back to the whole anxiety. Yes. Like, what the fuck? Like, why am I doing this? And it was talk about just having to really just go with it. And you know, balls to the wall. I had to do it. You know, I had to get over myself. And I mean, what I ended up finding was that the support was just amazing. I would be lying if I said I don't get nervous now. I do. Yeah. I still get nervous now, but it's because I know what's on the other side, that it's okay. Because I know that when I get out there, everyone's screaming for me. Yeah. Everyone wants me to do well. Everyone wants you to make the lift. There's nobody booing you and, you know, saying all these things to, like, you know, make you fail and not make your lift. That's not even a thing. Everyone in powerlifting really wants to see you make the lift. And it's just really awesome camaraderie. And just the sport is just, everyone I've met has been really cool and made competing, the experience of competing for me, really pleasant. And, you know, we all support each other. So it's really helped with my anxiety.
Yeah, so. I'm sure. I mean, that's like the biggest stage. So if any of you have not competed in Raw Nationals or seen what it's like, it's literally like a stage. So it's like lights. I'm sure they have a fog machine going. Like they have, it's a huge setup, and it's not televised. It's streamed, you know. So everybody is going to see. It's the big stage, you know. And so to have social anxiety and then go on that. I mean, that is. So do you think that that sort of like blunted it a little bit? So like maybe other situations where you might have had anxiety. What about presenting in front of people or being in those kind of situations? Have you found now it's easier for you?
Well, let's just say I would absolutely never agree to do a podcast
Yeah.
or to share my story to the Washington Post or do
Right.
anything of the sort had, powerlifting not had a direct effect on helping me with my anxiety. So I definitely see how it has helped me in my life outside of the platform 100%. Like
Yeah.
it's like night and day. I think back to how I would have handled some of these situations.
Yeah.
I'm like not even the same person. So there's definitely been a lot of growth, mentally, emotionally,
Yeah.
for sure.
You know, what's interesting is that, you know, part of the conversation we were having on, you know, in messages is you've been dealing with a back issue for a while now, right? So it's probably going on, what, over 45 days or so. You're all going on a couple months. And I've noticed you've gotten all types of therapy, which we've had conversations about. Like, if there is a new therapy, Anna's tried it. Like she's gotten some lasers, some lights, she's had glasses on, like some crazy shit. But part of our, which I love, I'm into alternative medicines, you know, for you people out there instead of just, you know, your typical opiates or things like that, which I'm sure you don't want to go down that road anyway. You know, it's something you want to avoid. But how has that been for you? Because I know that was part of the conversation we were having is that you were sort of struggling with that because so much of powerlifting was part of your new identity and who you are, and it was so integrated into in your life. And now that you've had to sort of put that on the back burner while you heal, that you maybe have been struggling with that a little bit. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you, like powerlifting has really just played such a tremendous role in my life. It's given me so many tools to be a successful person on and off the platform that sometimes I feel like it's really easy for me to allow that to make me feel like it's part of my identity, right?
Right.
And I think, struggling with that, the sport, it has just given me so much opportunity to find out about who I was that I find that, now with all the injuries and stuff that I'm having, I do have to take some time off after this. I'm a month out from competition. So after this competition, I've got to take some time off. And it's like this whole like thought process that goes off in my mind where I'm like, what is life after powerlifting? What do I do?
Right.
I think like I've like let it just take so much, like I've put so much energy into the sport and appreciating everything that it's done for me, that I feel like if I'm not active or competing or doing something that, am I going to lose my identity? Is all everything that I worked for, is all of it just going to be, just gone? But
Right.
that's not the case. Like I'm a
Yeah.
lot more than a squat, bench, and deadlift,
Right.
and I have to always reel it back in and remind myself that powerlifting is just a vehicle that helped me overcome these things and find myself.
Yeah.
So it's important to remember that. And I know that I'm not alone with that. I know
Yeah.
so many people that get wrapped up in powerlifting because it gives you a sense of belonging. And a
Yeah.
lot of us that are lost, we get into powerlifting. And, like I said earlier, we find our tribe. We're with all these people that, we really identify with, and you almost feel like this is your life.
Yeah.
A lot of us, we live, eat, and breathe the sport.
Yeah.
And the idea that, nothing lasts forever. Eventually, we're not all going to be able to compete, forever. So there has to be more than that. So it's important to just remember that, you are, or I am more than just those three lifts.
Yeah, that is so important because I think I struggled more with that in bodybuilding than I did with powerlifting. I think because by the time I got back into powerlifting, I had already sort of let that go of like, oh, I'm the fitness person, my family all reached out to me and my friends, they'd always ask me for advice and my videos were always about training and my life was really wrapped up in fitness and competing. And so I was always on the platform, not platform, on the stage. And when I finally decided to stop, It was definitely sort of a struggle for me to get to that point, because exactly what you're saying, because you get so wrapped up in, all right, well, if I'm not competing, and let's say I'm a little chubby, because I looked better when I was on stage and I was all cut, and so sort of this social proof, right? They see you look fit, you are actively competing. Oh, you're the professional. Now I felt like, oh my gosh, well, who's gonna, they don't know me. We're gonna move to a new place. Are they gonna take me serious? They don't know my past. They don't know, all these things. And I remember struggling with that a lot more. And it was something that I had to realize, I am more than that. I have more to offer, and I can still give more in the fitness realm. And even now with this podcast, it was my way to sort of be able to connect people and connect stories, because I felt like I found a lot of those kind of things. And I think we all have to take a step back at one point and ask ourselves, like, what are we doing? And it's fine if you don't want to do anything, to better the community or improve the powerlifting community. That's your own thing. But I think that all of us have some sort of purpose in us, and I think that if you really love the sport, that you'll find some way to give back within it, and to me, once the it's outside of you, once it's beyond you, then the motivation to help others is so much stronger. And so much lasting. It's not going to be something that's short-lived, like hitting the
Yeah,
stage,
I agree, and I think that's kind of it's interesting because with what I do in terms of my business with the web design, graphic design stuff, I'm working with so many athletes and so many powerlifting coaches that reach out to me, and I help them with their branding, their websites, logos, anything that they want, and I feel like for me that is continuing to stay involved in the sport. I'm still, it's awesome for me to help other athletes and other coaches, watching them grow and build their business, and me being a part of that. And it's all to help other power lifters. It's all to help everyone else get strong. And it's like, to me, that's so cool because I'm still involved, and I still get to know what's going on and, staying like in the loop of everything. So, there are times that, if it, I think if it wasn't for that kind of keeping me in the game, like I think I might really struggle just not having, the ability to compete anymore for a while. Like I need to still be involved. So I think that this is really good for me that, I'm doing this. So it's funny, it all kind of just, unfolds and works out that way.
Yeah, totally. And now, for those of you listening, on is like the go-to, right? So you did CC's logo, you did
And
Hopperican
website.
and website. Oh my goodness, you did Hopperican's website relaunch. I mean, this is a big deal, because this is like the antithesis, I mean, she was just starting it all up. She had all her line of clothing. It was kind of a big launch. It wasn't just the website. She was gonna be selling all this stuff, and that's a lot. People don't realize on the back end what has to go on with coding and things, so that your system doesn't get overloaded, and that things don't crash, because that is definitely a possibility with somebody who has, 70,000 followers and potentially thousands of people going to her website at one time. So that's a lot to handle. So how was that for you? Getting into doing that whole website for her.
I actually really, really enjoyed it. When her and I started talking initially about the project, it was kind of like, here are all these pieces. These are the things that I want. And it was kind of like, my job is to listen to what it is that my client wants. So when Amanda was talking to me and she said, okay, X, Y, Z, and I also need to be able to do this, and I have to do this, and I have to do this, but I have no idea how to do any of those things, but this is what needs to happen. So that's kind of my job at that point. So it's like throwing all these puzzle pieces at me, and I'm the one that has to put the puzzle together. So there's a lot of, most of it, I handle behind the scenes very seamless, and I just only involved her when I needed some input on things, because I try not to make it too overwhelming for my clients, for me to be coming at them like every 5 seconds with something. I mean, for the most part, I mean, once you've put together an online store, you it's pretty straightforward, and really at the end, all I need is the input on how you want the store to look, what are we putting on there, that kind of stuff. And her store, you know, that's in collaboration with Donuts and Deadlifts. So, you know, all that merchandise, you know, so there was a lot of, I had to kind of work with them also on the side to make sure the store was set up properly and so that we could get her merchandise sold and all that. So, yeah, it was, and that, and then there's the website, the other component itself for her training, you know, she wanted to be able to accept clients online and have an intake form and all this stuff to automate her life, right? Because it, before the website, it was like she would get an email or something like, hey, I'm interested in training. Okay, well, here, let me email you and ask you these questions. And then you send them back and then back and forth. Now you go on her website and you like sign up for training. You can fill out the form. It goes right to her inbox. And then she can decide at that point if she wants to reach out to that person or not. She knows exactly what that person's looking for. And then she can take it from there.
Right.
So my job really with all this is to try to make the life of a coach or an athlete or anyone that's trying to run a business or brand themselves. I just try to make their life a little bit easier by having a basically a one-stop shop when you go to their website, you know, everything that they're all about and what they're offering. So
it's so funny how those little things are so important, because when you're small, you have that time where you could be like, oh, let me look and I can take that time to do that. But when then you have probably hundreds of people at some point who are going to be responding, that is so much time. And I'm telling you, as like a business owner, I try to, right now we're in the process of automating a lot of things in our gym, and I'm paying good money for that. And the guy who's doing it is fantastic. He's running a whole back end email marketing thing, and I already have something in place, but I swear it's like in comparison to what he's going to be able to do for me. And it's so important. And I think that those are the things that maybe some of us in the fitness industry lose, and especially in powerlifting, because I think it's not, maybe not as looked at as professional, you know, because it's like almost like a side thing. It's not looked at as a business, so to say. Not everybody, you know, there are some people that take it and they, to me, elevate it to a business standard. So they have things in place, automations, autoresponders, you know, things like that, that I think are important. But that's pretty awesome. I didn't even look at CC's yet. So I got to see what it looks like. I just saw her logo.
Yeah, her website is pretty awesome. Her and I worked pretty hard on that back and forth, and you know, that opens up a lot of opportunities. You know, I did her site, and she was really happy with what I did. Yeah. You know, making everything super professional and just very seamless for her. And so, you know, I'm helping her with other projects too. You know, she's got some meets that she's directing, and so I'm putting together media kits for her and doing all kinds of stuff. So it opens the door for me to do all these other things. It's not just websites. It's really getting invested in the whole vision, everything that my client wants. You know, I'm like really invested in what they're doing and just making sure that, you know, the message is always getting across to their audience. And so whatever job that might be, you know, I'm pretty well versed in, you know, making that happen. So I think that's why people really enjoy working with me, because especially being active in the sport and just being so involved, I see things differently than, you know, if you were just to hire any other, you know, firm to do this, like a web design firm. I have a different approach because I'm in it.
Yeah.
So I can, you know, make the messaging and the visuals and everything, you know, really speak to our community.
Yeah, I think that's important, because you are, you know, like a customer. So you can go in there with the same potential, what do they call it? Avatar, right? You're the avatar. You can go in there and be like, okay, if I was going to hire Amanda or Cece, what would I look for? You know, I'm going to look for, you know, best in the world. I'm going to look for all these things that remind me or tell me that why I want to go with this person, and rates and things like that. So I think that's interesting, because you're going to have a special touch with that, which is fantastic. Cause I don't know anybody else that's doing your job. Let's say, I don't know anybody else that's kind of in your space.
Yeah. It's a niche for me. And honestly, it just started with me just wanting to help my friends. Like one of my first big projects that I had was actually working with my friend Stacy, you know, Bama Burr.
Bama.
I remember, you know, when she was kind of starting out wanting to sell her merchandise and wanted to have a space online where she could advertise for her training. Everything she was doing before was just really through her Instagram.
Yeah.
And one of the first big projects I did was I built her a website and I made her an online store. And I'll never forget the time that she sent me this, you know, really heartfelt message. And it really just solidifies why I do what I do, because she sent me that message. And I don't know if you know this about her, but way back in the day, she used to work at Frito-Lay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so she sent me this message saying, I can't believe this. Like, I, you know, have, the store has been online for, you know, not even a week, and I've already made my paycheck from Frito-Lay. I've already made this in a day selling merchandise.
Jeez.
And it's like, that to me is just like, this is why I do what I do. Yeah. It's so rewarding to be able to not only help people, but to help my friends and yeah. people that I legitimately just care so much about. And I just want them to, I just want to see them do well. And so to be able to have the skill set and resources yeah. to make something like that happen, this is literally changing people's lives.
Yes.
Like these, you know, people in our community, they give up. Like Stacy gave up her job at Frito-Lay so that she could pursue coaching people. Yeah. And now she's doing all this other shit, changing the world, being the best in the world, and, you know, changing lives and, you know, kissing babies and shit. So it's like, this is
white girls everywhere.
And it's amazing because you don't even have to be locked down to anybody. I mean, she could do what she's doing anywhere in the world.
Yep.
And the same for Cece and the same for Amanda. Like yeah. everyone that, you know, decides that they want to take it to the next level and run their business completely online, and I can make that happen for them. It's awesome to actually see them doing it and being successful at it.
Yeah. So, and you designed that shirt for her too, right? Her latest one.
I actually designed quite a few of her shirts.
Oh, really?
But the best, yeah, I do a lot of, actually most of her graphic design, I do it. So the Best in the World shirt is actually one of the most popular shirts I think she's ever had.
Yeah, I mean, that shirt's awesome. Like it yeah. just looks great. The statement, it's very her, you know, it's simply done, but I think with the gold like that, you know, it's a perfect amount of design yeah. that just fits her.
It's basically the way Stacy and I do things is she hits me up and she's like, yo, Anna, I have this idea. I think we should do this. I want this shirt. I want me on it. But like, I wanted to say like best in the world. I don't know. Make it happen. And I just hit her up like a few days later. I'm like, yo, what do you think about this? And she was like, that's Gucci. Let's do it. And that's really how we interact. So it's very much like Stacy just comes up with an idea and I just make it happen.
Yeah.
So some of them are really funny. Like we've done the douche canoe. Have you seen that one?
No, I have not seen that one.
Okay. Yeah. You should check it out. It's on the Bama Brick Squad website.
Okay.
It's literally a drawing, like a caricature style drawing of Stacy. And she's just kind of like flexing and she's by a canoe and it says douche canoe on it because that's kind of like this ongoing hashtag that she has with
yeah,
the following.
Yeah. I never understood that. I don't think I ever like got tuned into the douche canoe. I don't know if I would, I must have missed that train.
Yeah. You missed the canoe.
The canoe. I missed the canoe. Hey, so if we have anybody out there that, you know, maybe is in where you were at, let's say that, you know, they came out of addiction and they were sort of struggling where you were, where you're trying to have this life, you know, you're moving on, you're doing things better for your life, but you're still sort of struggling with the person that you were. Do you have any advice for anybody out there that might be going through something very similar?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this is advice that I would give to anybody in this situation. I would just say that, you know, remember that you don't have to settle for the cards that were dealt to you. You have the power to exchange those cards, which is something that I had to learn over time. But as long as you can mentally visualize the outcome, then it's going to happen. So I just like to remind people and remind myself that you're always in control of the outcome. Yeah. Always. And this applies to our lives, everyday lives, our careers, our relationships, our competitions on and off the platform, everything. You can apply that principle that you do not have to settle for the cards that were dealt to you. So yeah.
That's beautiful, man. This has been a great, great conversation. We didn't even talk about Puerto Rican food, which we did talk a little bit about tostones.
And we talked about my parents' restaurant.
Yeah.
So I mean,
I was like, you know, yeah. we need to talk about some Puerto Rican food, but yeah, no, I think I gotta get on the bus or the train and learn how to throw some down pretty good. And I don't know if there's anybody here that even makes any. There will be tamales somewhere. Somebody has tamales because there's Mexicans in these area, but
Yeah, I mean, tamales are just Mexican pasteles. I mean,
they are, but they don't taste the same. You know, it's
oh,
like I like the
the same.
masa. It's just like it's good, but
It's the same
yeah,
concept.
same
It's
concept.
not, yeah, because in the pasteles, we use root vegetables for all that. So it's very different. And you can put all kinds of stuff inside of them. I'll be honest with you, I don't know how to make them, but my mom makes them. So it's kind of one of
Oh,
those things that
wow.
when she comes to visit, she does the whole like, stocks up my freezer with
Yeah,
stuff.
yeah,
So
yeah.
you make my frito, like I get
Yes.
batches of that.
I'm
And I
nice
get
and
all
fruit.
the pasteles, all of them.
Oh,
And
my
I
mom
just sit there.
doesn't.
Oh man,
See,
okay.
my mom was like, I never, she makes all the other stuff. She'll stock up on my sofrito. She'll make me, she did like, she likes French food too, so she'll make this mix, but she never really learned how to make pasteles from my grandmother. And they probably bumped heads too much in their youth, so she probably was like, no, I don't even wanna be around when you're doing all that. So
Yeah.
I'm always around my grandmother when she's making it. Actually, my last show in New York, she came to. It's just a funny story because my grandma, she's a spicy Puerto Rican woman, and we didn't think that she would enjoy the show because I mean everybody's in like they're really skimpy and muy fresa, you know what I mean? And my mom was like, Mom, are you sure you want to come? Oh no, I'm gonna come, I'm gonna come. And the whole time I was like, well, let's see what happens. She was like, ooh, he's got a good backside. She's saying all this stuff. It was so funny. And that, right after, she made me arroz gandule and some pasteles, and she made me like a full-on Puerto Rican meal I hadn't eaten in months because I was like starving myself, right, for the show. I was like thin but not thin enough to, be super competitive. But yeah, that was my last the last time I got to eat some really good food, some really good Puerto
Wow.
Rican food. Yeah, it was a long time.
Well, my mom, like I said, she normally would do that, but I told you about the whole coffee thing before, and you remember the screenshot that I sent you of my mom? So I'll tell you guys the story is I was so excited that I started drinking coffee like 2 weeks ago. And my mom, it's like kind of like how you said that you had like the coffee farm. It's like sacrilegious if you don't drink coffee. What's the same being in like a Puerto Rican family? Like it's just if you don't drink coffee, are you even Puerto Rican? So I grew up, my whole life never liking coffee. And my mom, I thought that she would be really happy to hear the news that I now drink coffee. And so I sent her a text message, really excited. And I sent it to her in Spanish, and I told her that I'm drinking coffee now. And she was just like, gay? Like super insulted. And she was just kind of like, really, after all these years, like I feel like she was salty about it, right? But then
Oh, you
she
don't want
tried
to
to be
do
nice.
it. Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, oh, your whole life I tried making you café con leche and you just like, whatever, now you drink coffee. And so I think she tried to reel it back in though. And then she was like, okay, next time we hang out, I'm going to make you a, traditional Puerto Rican coffee. I'm like, okay, and I'm like continuing on with the conversation. And I'm like, hey, mom. So my mom lives in Nashville. And I'm like, I'm going to be going to the tribute meet in Texas. So on the way there, I was thinking of stopping by to visit you. And she was like, okay. And so the next thing I say to her was, I mean, clearly what any Puerto Rican daughter would do, I asked her if she could hook me up with some homemade Puerto Rican food. I even actually listed the items of the things that I wanted. I wanted my rice and beans. I wanted tostones. I wanted this, that, and the other. And she literally fucking left me on read. Like my 71-year-old mom left me on red, and she still hasn't responded. So I'm not sure that I will get my whole freezer restocked with things after that conversation. I have to let her get over the coffee thing.
That's hilarious, man. I envy you. Like, when now my mom will come and she'll cook things for me. But yeah, I should probably tell her she needs to get on the. Hey, mom, you start making these other things at 70 years old. You need to start learning how to make pasteles because that's a real necessity in my family right now. Well, Anna, this has been fantastic. Where can everybody find your website? Because I know that you can find you on Instagram, and I'll put all that in the show notes after. But where else can your potential clients find you?
Yeah, you guys can find me on my website. It's smashcreative.net.
Wonderful. And I will log everything else in there. Anna, thank you so much. This has been very, very good conversation, and I think it's going to be helpful for a lot of women just to hear your story. And I thank you for sharing that with me.
Wow.
It's kind of crazy.
Also, I was wondering if you were going to ask me the what the fuck was I thinking question.
Yes!
because I was trying to think, I feel like my whole life is a what the fuck am I thinking moment, right? And so I was just trying to think of, you know, something that probably wasn't so like messed up and tragic. I'm like, okay, what have I done recently that was like, what the fuck was I thinking?
Yes, let me hear it.
So a couple weeks ago, right around the time when I started drinking coffee, I don't know if they're related to that, but I was training and my hip flexor was like really bothering me after. Just felt really like aggravated. And you know, I'm in prep, I'm a month out, so I'm like, I can't have anything happen to me.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make sure that I stayed on top of whatever that hip flexor pain was and address it. So I come home from the gym, I take a shower, and I'm like, I noticed that I have a whole collection of liniments, you know, all different grades from like mild to like really intense, like burn your skin off. So I chose really intense burn your skin off. And it's actually made out of 25% capsaicin, like the
Shut
hot pepper
up.
Oil.
No.
Yeah, it's actually meant for horses. And I actually read the label the other day and it actually says it's not even for human use. So I thought if it's good enough for a horse, it's good enough for me.
You 25%?
Yeah, it's like serious stuff. And it's like specifically for horses. But you know, some of those labels, they all say it's for horses. Like people have that, like, yes. That shampoo, that horse and yes. Shit or whatever.
Yeah, I had that as a kid.
I thought this was no different. So I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm just going to put it on because it has the most powerful concentration of, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So put it on right after the shower. And I remembered immediately after that most of those liniments always say do not put on after you showered because your pores are open. And so if you put that hot stuff on there, it's going to burn the shit out of your skin.
Right.
Well, I put it on immediately after I showered. So I decide at that point, completely buck naked, that I'm going to just lay here and air it out. So I'm laying down in bed watching Forensic Files. No big deal. And then all of a sudden I feel this really extreme burning, but the burning is no longer on my leg. So if you could just imagine where it decided to gravitate towards. So now I'm laying there and you know what is like on fucking fire, like a burning that I've never felt before. And I'm like, you know, my eyes are welling up with tears and I'm in so much pain, like it's unbearable. So in a panic, you know, Google is like, you know, oh, well just use soap and water. So I'm like running to the bathroom and trying to use soap and water to get everything out. And it's just making it fucking worse. So now I'm like, I can't even like hear myself think. And you know, when you get like that really hot feeling where your like skin feels flushed,
yes.
And everything is just like, my whole body is just feeling flushed and like hot and I can't focus and you know, everything's on fire. So the other solution that it said to do was Greek yogurt. It said if you apply the area that it will absorb the hot pepper oil from the capsaicin and it'll go away. So I'm like running out of options here. And yeah. Like, you know, time is on my side because like my skin is literally melting off.
Yeah.
So thankfully I actually have Greek yogurt in the fridge. So next thing you know, I end up like spread eagle with like
my yogurt Greek on. Yogurt.
So this is more like, I think it's like, you know, since we're talking about being vulnerable and yeah. All that, like, I think it's important that people know about that because I am sure I'm not the only person that's ever done that, but just so we're clear, Greek yogurt fucking works.
Okay.
That's it. 5 minutes. I was able to reel it back in and I'm going to live another day.
Dude, that is so crazy. And you know, it's funny. I've never heard the Greek yogurt because capsaicin is in pepper spray. And when they do like pepper spray, like my husband's done it in the military where everybody got, you know, they get sprayed. So you know what it feels like. They pretty much are like, you have no choice. I mean, you can put some water, but once that water starts running down, then everywhere it touches is also going to get, you know, capsaicin on it. I mean, you're going to have that pepper spray. So they're like, you just got to like tilt your head forward and spray it and just like deal with the pain pretty much. But interesting. So yogurt, huh?
Yeah. So just, you know, Greek yogurt in case you ever put liniment and it ends up somewhere else.
So that's definitely going to be part of the podcast because it's still recording. It's definitely going to be part of it. And I think that is nominated as the best what the hell I was thinking out of all of them. Because I got a real good visual of what was going on before and after. And
yeah. I mean, yeah, just imagine, like, you come home from the gym and you're like, fuck my life, my freaking hip flexor. I'm in prep. This cannot happen. I've got to do something. And I'm just like, I'm desperate. I got to put something on there. Yeah. So I don't know. I could have chosen, you know, anything else. I could have put, you know, just an ice pack on it. I could have done a heating pad. I could have foam rolled it. I could have done so many things. But no, I chose the liniment that is not even meant for fucking humans.
Why did you have horses. That? How did you even have that?
I got it off the internet. Yes. I was just searching for something. The fucking internet. I was just searching for something that was powerful.
That is so funny.
You know, I just said I was an extremist. Yeah. So I even down to the liniments, I'm extreme. I want the strongest shit that's out there and it better work. So it did work, but it worked a little bit too much. And I'm so, so happy that I had Greek yogurt because I don't know what I would have done because soap and water was not cutting it.
That is so crazy. You just would have been sitting there fanning it out and crying. Can you imagine that?
It was out of control. I already was. I was crying and like I really was. I was trying to fan it out. I remember taking like a cold compress and putting it on there. I was like desperate reaching and the yogurt thing just happened to save the day. So
I was so such a good visual.
Ask me about that.
Such a good visual. That's good. You know what? And this is what happens when I get into conversations that are so deep that I forget it. So it's never consistent in the podcast. If you notice, like, it's like, oh, you said it there. And then you forgot the next time. It's like, I get so wrapped up sometimes and I have to write it down. And I actually wrote it down here next to me so that it reminds me to ask at the end. But it's one of those things where I get so deep in the conversation that I forget. But so glad that you shared that. Like, that is epic. I can't believe that. Well, a first note to myself would be not to put that anywhere near there. And second note is to keep handy some Greek yogurt in the fridge.
Yeah, always.
Always.
Always. Like,
you just never know.
Do not sleep on the Greek yogurt. Don't sleep on it.
I probably have some Greek yogurt popsicles. Maybe that would be my next best bet. Oh, like, rub some popsicles on there.
Yeah, yeah. I like the way that sounds, actually.